Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What makes me angry is this thing that women have to fit themselves into these boxes that have not been designed for them. They haven't even been designed with them in mind.
Yes. Right?
And it's like we have to squeeze ourselves into, contort ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we get quite injured.
Contortion is a really good word for it.
Yeah. Mm. And we get quite injured in the process. And then people are like, that's your fault because you can't fit into this fucking box.
Welcome to Women Are Mad, where we invite women to bring their anger into everyday conversation. We're all feeling it. Let's get together to work out what to do with it. I'm Selena Saxton, I'm an actress and writer.
I'm Jennifer Cox, and I'm a psychotherapist. We noticed that anger is the one emotion that women aren't allowed to openly express. Meanwhile, everything around us is making us absolutely furious.
By talking about women's anger freely, we hope we'll inspire you to do the same.
Welcome to series 3 of the Women Are Mad podcast. We've got some fabulous women for you this season, from Viv Groskop to Deborah Joseph to Colette Okafor. And we're getting very real. For now, let's kick ourselves off in the usual way. Salima, can I tell you what's made me mad this week?
Please.
Okay. When a male partner draws attention to the fact that a hell of a lot of processed food is used to feed, to sustain the family.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to join you in that right now. I don't want you for a second to think that because of my husband's organic work routes that we'd live the good life. We don't. So I just want to have kinship out loud right now and say we are a fully fledged fish finger household.
We don't even, fish fingers would be
health food.
Gold standard. Yeah, that is the organic.
I mean, I just want to admit now as well, if we're just going all out here, that I said fish fingers knowing full well that we've had a pack in the freezer for about a year, but I thought that sounded kind of healthy. And like kind of like, yeah, I'm with you, fish finger sandwiches, but it gets much bleaker in my household all the time.
Imagine then, and you will know this well, when man partner draws attention to the fact that all of this is going on, woman partner is stretched within an inch of her life, just about manages to put this freezer food on the table.
Yes, but they're eating. They're alive.
Something is going in.
Yeah.
The guilt that comes from these allegations of unhealth and then the 3 a.m. type wakings of, oh my God, what does it mean for the cells?
Mental health, their adulthood, their children.
Three times this week.
Their lives.
Packets of rice put in the microwave. What about all that plastic leaching in? You know. Yeah.
I mean, my moment is the macaroni cheese, where I buy a processed macaroni cheese. I cook a whole pan of macaroni and then I mix it all up. So it's a massive macaroni cheese. And husband pointed out that I should just make it from scratch.
Yes, I should. Love that.
But it takes 2 minutes. It takes 2 minutes to microwave that and shove a thing on and then like mix it all in. And then occasionally one child will eat some peas with it occasionally. But like it's, and then I can get back to doing what I need to be doing.
Can I call this what I think it is?
Yeah.
Male violence.
Oh no, please don't. This is when we.
Because our bodies.
I'm really uncomfortable with this male violence.
Our 3 a.m. wakings.
Yeah.
That pang in the stomach, that anxiety that can feel coursing through your.
But that's not violence. That is not male violence.
Yes, it is. Because they're not feeling it. They're feeling absolutely great now. They've just dumped that on you. They're not going, oh, Don't worry, I'll go and make that macaroni cheese. Don't worry about it. I've thought of 5 meals that the whole family will eat from scratch, fresh, freshly prepared, highly nutritious.
I'm not on board with this yet.
You're going to get there.
Am I on the train with you?
You're on the train because what your voice is the voice of the downtrodden, and and it's the voice where it's the patriarchal voice. You are feeding it through your own. Yeah.
Okay. Fine.
You're going. I don't think they're that bad. Be kind to the poor men.
Never hashtag be kind to anybody, but never hashtag be kind.
Because you see how it's like a passive way of getting damage into face.
Yes.
I see
I'm frozen
face.
On screen.
I see that frozen face. And that frozen face is now going to be introduced to our guest of the week. Our guest today is unparalleled in using her talent to bring the raw honesty of her experiences to other women. Generosity and a desire to help others shines through and defines her copious achievements. Please welcome the unrivaled journalist, columnist, podcaster, and memoirist, Bryony Gordon.
Oh, that's such a nice introduction. I'm very rarely described as a memoirist.
I love that. I kind of just plucked it, but I thought it probably exists as a...
And it is kind of who I am.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right? I'm surprised that people don't describe you like that.
But I feel like men who write about the very serious subject of themselves, they are described as memoirists, whereas us women, if we write about ourselves, it's confessional.
Oh no, is that what it is?
Yeah. Or it's like, you know, pours her heart onto the page. Is it a good idea? You know, question mark. Is this a good idea? Does it harm everyone around her? And whereas, I don't know, when some man does it, it's like thoughtful and
artful and celebrating.
Yes, of course. Mm. So, Bryony, we're going to get right into it, actually, and we're going to kick off and ask you what makes you angry.
Oh, I mean, have we got all day?
As long as you need.
What makes me angry is that so many of us are made to feel a kind of gaslit and made to feel like freaks, when actually the way that we're feeling is really appropriate. And by that, I mean people who are experiencing mental health issues, but also women sort of generally in terms of their lived experiences of so many things. I was thinking about this the other day. Well, I've been thinking about this a lot because my book is kind of essentially about this.
Yeah.
Of how I spent my whole life feeling like a freak and like I'm like, why do I have OCD? Why have I had periods of depression? Why am I an alcoholic? You know, why eating disorders? And it's because I'm a kind of sensitive person, but also partly because it's all really appropriate to the world that I live in. Mm-hmm. That is not set up for me.
Yes.
It's not set up for me. And it's kind of all of these things come out in the resistance of like, oh, but I don't want to live in the world like this.
Yeah.
And I guess I kind of, so that's what makes me angry. What makes me angry is this thing that women have to fit themselves into these boxes that have not been designed for them. They haven't even been designed with them in mind.
Yes.
Right? And it's like we have to squeeze ourselves into, contort ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we get quite
injured.
Contortion
is a really good word for
it. Yeah. And we get quite injured in the process. And then people are like, that's your fault because you can't fit into this fucking box.
But do you find that as you've got older, because I certainly have found this, that I'm no longer willing to get into some of those boxes? I'm annihilating those boxes. I'm like ripping them up and burning them.
I'm burning them.
Writing your book, this book is kind of a refusal to get into a box because it's drawing attention to exactly this. This is what's happened. This is how it's manifested for me. I've had enough. Does it apply to anyone else here? Well, yes, we know it does.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Every book I've written has really been like, I have had these things happen in my life that have made me feel freakish. And then I talk about them and loads of other people are like, oh, that happened to me too. Mm. And I'm like, oh, so this isn't that unusual. You know, it's not that comfortable, but it's not unusual. And so, yeah, so when I've learned that when something happens in my life that's unpleasant, some sort of mental health thing, I guess, for lack of a better word, phrase for it, the chances are someone else has experienced it or is thinking these things as well. So that, you know, that's very much what why I do what I do. And this book, yeah, it was very much like, hang on. So I'm now at the age of 40 or whatever, I'm experiencing another kind of eating disorder, binge eating disorder, which I didn't even know was an eating disorder. And, you know, but, and I'm like, oh, why aren't I cured of this fucked up relationship I have with my body? Yeah. You know, I'm supposed to be better. I'm supposed to, you know, I've run a marathon in my pants. I'm supposed to be better. I'm supposed to be a poster girl for plus size women doing exercise. And yet I've been tripped up by this again. And then I was like, oh, I tell you why I'm not cured of it. Because A, when is anyone ever cured of anything?
Right.
But B, I don't live in a society that really wants me to be cured of fucked up eating, like disordered eating. I'm, you know, I spent my whole life being told that to be valuable, I need to be a certain size. I need to fit into that certain box and I need to look that way. And if I don't, then I'm not a kind of valid human being. So, and, you know, the way that diet culture pervades everything, you know, it used to be really obvious. Now it's kind of more sinister and under, you know, it comes in sideways. So it's like, oh, I eat for my gut health and then I don't have to count calories. And I'm like, you don't have to count calories because you're not eating anything for gut health. Or, you know, or like eat to prevent blood sugar spikes. And I'm like, well, like your blood sugar is supposed to spike. That's the point of it, kind of thing. Anyway, so it comes in sideways and there's all this sort of wah, wah, wah noise. And isn't it? Yeah, so, and food is really powerful. So I was like, oh, I bet you someone else has gone through this. And guess what? They have.
So, Bryony, how is it having all of this out in the public sphere? comfortable?
Yeah, it's kind of fine. Like, I guess because I've had OCD since I was a younger girl. I sort of, there's a kind of aspect of OCD that people don't really know about, which is kind of confessing to things. Because it's almost like getting it out there and then you can't hate me. Or right. So I guess there's a little element of that in it. So I don't find it hard and I don't find it difficult. It's like, I guess it's a relief because it's like, well, it's out there
and
it's
shining a light. Yeah.
And it helps me because I get to meet other people like me. So it's not, I don't find it, for whatever reason, I don't find any shame in writing about this stuff. In fact, it kind of gets rid of the shame for me. And I'm really lucky in that respect. So I don't know. It's like the only way I know how to be.
And when you're thinking about, so, for example, you say the binge eating seems to have arrived now, or this form that is taken has arrived now for you. Yeah. And what relationship do you think that has with potentially your anger? So if your book is about kind of the history of how this world has made you feel certain ways and made you have to contort yourself and made you have to kind of resort to various uncomfortable solutions, what do you think the binge eating is a solution to potentially now? And can we think about it in this context of anger?
I guess binge eating for me was, I got sober in 2017 and the pandemic happened, as we know. So when the pandemic happened, I was about 2.5 years sober and I was still, you know, still am kind of early on in recovery, but I knew I couldn't pick up a drink. Like that was not an option. So I guess for me, food was like a coping mechanism. Mm. So it was like,
and it felt safer.
Yeah, and I guess its relation to anger would be that it stopped me from feeling it. You know, it stops me from feeling
quite anesthetizing
anything. Yeah, and so for me, life has been, as I get further into recovery, and recovery is not linear, so I kind of wanted to explore that as well in this book. You know, the less I rely on things to numb my feelings, mm-hmm. you know, the more I allow myself to have those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really binge eat. I mean, I haven't, it's very different, like recovery from getting like sober from food is obviously not the same as getting sober from booze. Like, I don't have to drink alcohol to live. It may have felt like that at the time, but I didn't. But I do have to eat food. So it's kind of less, it's less kind of, it's less straight. Like, I don't kind of hold myself to that. Like, I just can't have alcohol and I won't have alcohol. But occasionally I will find myself numbing a bit with food and be like, that's okay. Like, that's all right. We pull ourselves back. You know, that's just, you recognize it. It doesn't have the, anyway. So I'm really glad right now I'm not in that period, but it's, food is a kind of complicated thing, I think, for a lot of people. It's the first way we learn we have any power over our like caregivers, isn't it? We like, yes. I'm not going to eat this broccoli. I'm going to throw it on the floor. And, you know, so, and I always really liked food, and I always felt really ashamed of it as a child, because I was like, I can see from how this behavior is modeled to me that I am not supposed to like food.
Right. Do you mean from your parents, from your mother?
From, I mean, just like, I grew up in the 80s, I imagine, like, you know, and it was like, oh, I'm being naughty because having a slice of chocolate.
And also I'm being naughty margarine. For eating food, which I'm programmed to require.
Jen knows this, but I remember my mum, when I was 10, I'd got heavier, and my mum used to make me go on a run down the country lane every evening to kind of get those pounds off or whatever. And she, you know, and I talk about it with her now, and she's like, she sees nothing wrong with it whatsoever, even though I was 10. I was just like a little bit kind of, I love my food. And then taking the butter off my toast, you know, the idea of fat being bad. And my mum, my 81-year-old mum, still thinks fat is bad. You know, she always scrapes the butter on a tiny bit, or so I remember, women of that generation.
Yeah.
You know, well, it wasn't just women. Like, my dad, he barely eats anything at all. And he's like 80, he's 80, he'll be 81 this year. And he's out every morning skipping, like... Like, and he doesn't eat. He doesn't, and he's very much like, you know, and my mum's the same. And I remember, they used to eat. They used to come home from work and they would eat. They wouldn't eat, basically. They would like have a bottle of wine, bottle of red wine.
Yes.
And then they'd have like some taramasalata. Very fucking 80.
I love a taramasalata.
It's a very like very like Jewish kind of, my dad's Jewish. It was very kind of like, so they'd have some taramasalata and maybe like half a bit of pita bread each. And then some spring onions. I'm like, are they just eating the spring onions raw with the taramasalata?
I'm just thinking about their poor stomach.
Yeah, exactly.
Wine, their little tummy. And spring onion. Ow.
That sums up the 80s for me. We got that and special
ulcers.
How did you?
But Bryony, I don't know about you, but it led me into my university years, where it were just years of either Special K, not eating, alcohol. I just went through like weird obsessive phases.
Yeah,
I really learned from my childhood and my teenage years.
Chewing
gum.
I remember your mashed potato phase. Yes. You got me into that, actually, the boxed mashed potato.
Yes, right, the dry one.
Yeah. Yeah. It was nice though. Bryony, can we ask you a question? Yeah. Another question. I was looking at our list.
I just want to say quickly that the mashed potato diet sounds good to me.
Oh, it was
great.
Okay, Bryony, when did you last get angry with someone or something? What happened?
Oh, I mean, like, probably. I'm trying to think. Really, honestly, let me have a think about this. Oh, yesterday, I was angry with the manufacturers of the running vest that I had on while I was out doing a long run, because they were not designed for people with boobs. And it was riding up. And then I got, but this was like, so I was about 5 miles into this run and I was on the side of the River Thames, ready to like just go, oh, and I think I maybe did, but I had my headphones in so I couldn't like hear myself. And then
it's a good tip.
All of these like all of these men just like speeding past me on their like long runs, just like and I wasn't their fault, but I was just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, you're not like running with these boobs on. And I got angry then about how like entitlement and the ease with which white men do exercise.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Do you ever find it difficult
to express anger? I'm guessing no.
Yeah, of course I do. Like I remember once I went on this, I went to this retreat, which was like amazing. And it was like a week long and no phones, no anything. And one day they were like, put us in a room and they were like, you have to scream and shout at whoever, whatever anger you're holding. And everyone just very happily started screaming and shouting. And I was just like, I cannot do that. This was,
really?
It was so hard for me. I was like, no, I can't do this. And it was so hard that I actually was sick in a waste paper basket.
Wow.
Yeah.
That hard.
And it wasn't that long ago. It was like 2019. So wow. I can get kind of angry at like concepts and ideas.
Big stuff.
And issues. But I am a real people pleaser.
Okay, so if we were to get into an argument,
yeah,
how would that come
look
out?
Look how nervous
you
are, even no, don't worry. With that thought in
won't,
mind.
We won't. But if we were, hypothetically.
I wouldn't like it. I'd just be like, oh no, you're obviously right, Salima. I made a mistake and I just slapped down the laptop and then I'd send a message and be like, I'm so sorry, did I upset you? Yeah.
Really?
Oh.
I said, Bryony, from all that I know of you and how you speak up for so many of us,
yes,
that really surprises me.
Does it? Yeah, no.
Yeah, hugely.
I think I'm better at standing up for myself. Do you know what I mean? But
can you imagine a scenario in which someone upset you, like a stranger or let's say a stranger is easier, yeah, and you were able to say, "Oh, actually, I didn't really like that."
Or, yeah, no, I can say things like that to strangers, and I can speak up for myself, like reasonably well in a work setting, generally.
Okay.
But I then afterwards like spiral into this kind of like, I shouldn't have done that.
I relate to that.
And then I have to like check. So I like call my husband. I was like, so this thing happened. And then I did this and I put a boundary down. And was that the right thing to do? Was I right? Did I respond? Was I right to feel that? And he's like, you're mad.
Bryony, this is exactly how I use my husband 95% of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, should I have done? He's like, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
But also
whatever.
He's like, you did it. And, so like,
and, yeah. Oh, that you did it is quite painful, isn't it? Because that just forces you back with it. Yes, I did do it. Yes, I can't deny I did it. They're even now saying you did it. It's official. I did it.
But I think,
and then come the text. Sorry. That's your issue. I've got to now apologize.
But I have this thing where my head, because of like, I suppose, a history of mental illness since childhood, my head will often, like, I feel like quite often I'm in hypervigilance to check I haven't upset someone, yeah, haven't done anything wrong. And I'm sort of scanning the environment constantly, yes, to like make sure. And I find I can worry obsessively about that. Like I can turn anyone, but like I can, a good friend or whatever, I'll be worried I've upset them because of something. And yeah, and it's sort of like, if they don't immediately reply to a message, I'm like, that's it, they hate me.
Oh, yes. I understand that.
Yeah,
I mean, I understand both for both of you. I can feel how painful, but I just want to
sort of pick you up and cradle you and you, say, but it's not. But Bryony, please don't.
But you know what helped me with this, Bryony, was actually a kind of ghosting experience I had with friendship where, you know, I lost a dear friend, and it was a very uncomfortable thing for me, but it kind of cured me because I trust my friendships a lot more now. I'm much more, I don't know if I upset Jen, who I've known since I was 18. I trust it will all be okay now.
Because we can talk about, I mean, this is the other thing, Bryony, when you were saying you find it difficult to talk with friends or to tell a friend that they might have upset you or made you angry, for example, we can do that. Salima and I can do that with each other.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is that I don't think I was ever taught to learn that it's okay it's okay if you upset someone.
Right.
Like it's obviously not ideal, but it happens and it's not a reflection of you as a person generally, more generally. Right. So I genuinely think when I upset someone, it's like a massive black stain against my character.
Oh, Bryony.
That's how my brain works. So I'm having to get, so like I had this situation with a friend who is so brilliant. And I was like, I made a mistake. And she was like, it's fine, Bryony. I mean, she was literally like, don't worry, darling. She knows. Mm. She was like, I could tell she knew
she
exactly
knew
what
you
she
needed.
And she was
a good
also
friend.
Like, she was like, I am not going to indulge her in this either because she's got her own life going on.
Yeah.
But she was like, it's totally fine. I'm very relaxed about this. And that was a beautiful thing because it was like, I can. But it's almost like I have this perfectionism, which is that in order to be a worthy person or like I have to be good the whole time. That's kind of what Mad Woman the book is about. It's about that thing of like it's like that pressure to be a good girl.
Yeah, yes. Totally.
And how unwell that has made me over the years because it's like I've pushed so hard against the times that I haven't been good or I haven't been okay. And I'm like, I can't be like this. I cannot be like this. I need to dismiss the way I'm feeling and just keep striving to be the way that I'm told I can be. And that's what's caused me a lot of pain. That's what's led to like alcoholism and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So for me, this book is a real kind of like acceptance of my flaws and my failures. And the fact that I have them and I don't get it right. And that's okay because who does? And life is this. And I think I put a lot of pressure on myself after, you know, I suppose those first few years of sobriety when I was very public about that. And that I was like, I have to look like I have to make like I think people want like they want neat beginnings and middles and ends.
Yeah.
And I felt very much that I had to like show people that I had faced down my demons and triumphed over adversity.
Exhausting.
And if you do that, life's okay. And then I was like, I can't show people that I'm just a bit of a mess again. And now I'm like, no, I can't do that. That's
and
fine.
Thank God. Thank and God thank you are.
Because but also, because
we're all a bit of a mess as well in our own ways, right?
It's human.
We need to see this reflected in women who are doing great, writing great books such as yours and are in the media. We need to see all of these edges and these frayed edges so we know that it's okay for what we're striving for and that all our messed up stuff in our heads, all the spaghetti strands, that's quite normal. That's okay.
And
thank God.
As you say, it's reality, isn't it? So you're basically responding to a world which is mad, and that isn't your fault. You know, when you think of yourself in this way as even kind of flawed and making mistakes and all the rest of it, that's good because you're compassionate, you're being kind to yourself. But also I think there's another step, which is it's just not wrong. It is, as Salima says, just ordinary. This is what being a human is in a world which frankly isn't made for us. It doesn't help us at all.
Well, there is a bit in the book where I talk about this world. It wants me to be the kind of woman that doesn't allow for being human.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
AI.
I was going to say exactly. Yeah. And thank God you're not. Thank God. I mean, just to that's, anger allows you to do such incredible, extraordinary, propulsive things, doesn't it? When you show all aspects of oneself and speak up.
Can we ask you about this, actually? Can you think of a time where anger has pushed you to do something extraordinary, incredible?
I guess in terms of like the campaigning work I've done on mental health, I think, mm-hmm. I suppose that's definitely propelled forward by anger at the fact that there's so little in terms of provision out there for people, and anger at the thought of how people are suffering out there. I guess at the moment I'm doing this, I'm training for this running challenge to raise money for Mental Health Mates, but also to show that exercises for everyone, no matter what your size is, and how transformational exercise is for your mental health. Like the moment I started exercising for the way it makes me feel rather than the way it makes me look, for the gains and not the losses, you know, mm-hmm. for making my world bigger rather than myself smaller. Nice. Exercise was kind of transformed for me. So I'm doing this thing. I'm doing the Brighton Marathon, then I'm going to run from Brighton to London, and then I'm going to do the London Marathon. And I have to say, it's obviously hard. That's the point. But I have to say, most of my training runs are propelled by anger at the assholes in the comment section on my pieces who are like, you're fat, you're disgusting, da, 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 you shouldn't be doing this, you're a disgrace. And so, yes, that fuels it because I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah, great. Wonderful. How can we best support you? Financially, anything? No, not for that. I mean, like, as in, not you yourself. I mean, like, that came out wrong. I mean, as in, if you're raising money,
here's
Brian.
Here's my tin. I'm shaking my tin.
Brian. That came out so bad. Are you raising money and things? And because you tell us how to do it.
I'm raising money for Mental Health Mates.
How do we support?
Well, there's a Just Giving link, but I don't know what it off the top of my head is.
We'll add it. Yes.
It's called Bryony's Big Challenge. If you go on my Instagram, the link's
it's
there.
All there. Okay. And it's not for your own financial gains. I know that. To buy a lovely dress.
No,
get your hair done.
It's to raise money for Mental Health Mates. But I should say that I set up Mental Health Mates nearly 10 years ago, but I've never taken a penny from Mental Health Mates. And it's to be able to support the walk leaders. So I can pay. So basically Mental Health Mates can pay for the administrative people who support all the walk leaders out there and provide them with their training, basically.
Brilliant.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Well done, you. Okay, before we let you go, Bryony, can you please come with us into our virtual rage room? And we're going to hand you a virtual baseball bat.
Okay. And she was reaching for it then.
At the objects you choose. So firstly, starting with a current news item making you seethe.
Oh, yes. So there was one today that on the front page of a newspaper I shan't name, and it said Generation Sick Note. And it was about how young people they're prioritizing their mental health over the economy.
And how dare they?
The idiots. What are they thinking?
And we've turned in, we're generation of snowflakes. I would like to take a baseball bat to that, please. Okay,
yes, quite
one.
Right.
Good one.
Aspect of modern life making you fume.
Judgment, the binary judgment on social media.
Nice.
Yeah, that sort of cancel culture, which makes people very afraid.
Yes, of saying anything.
But like also it sort of, obviously it makes people it makes people want to do better, but I think it also makes people scared to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to be able to make mistakes and learn from them. That's how you get better as a human.
Yes.
So
good.
Yeah. Maybe not cancel culture. I don't want to just more that bright binary judgment. Or left or right. I think the reality is that most of us are somewhere in the middle.
Agreed. Mm. Okay. Behavior of others, which gets on your wick.
Cruelty, nastiness, you know, just like bullying.
Yeah.
you know, using collective power to make other people feel shit.
Okay, what about current slang or meme making you rage?
Oh, I don't know if it makes me rage, but I do feel like the takes on Saltburn online are a bit like still looking at everyone's Glastonbury pictures, like, enough.
Yes. Oh. That's such a good point.
Like, okay, we get you. Yeah. I watched Saltburn and I just thought it was nothing more than a very nice way to spend a night between Christmas and New Year.
Agreed. And it's finished now. Yes.
Exactly. It's really set something off, hasn't it?
And then people are like, they have to, like, they're like, oh, they go into like film critic mode and are like, my two pennies worth. And I'm like, no, thank you.
What do you think that's about? Why do you think that's happened?
Sort of class, isn't it?
It is.
I don't know. But also that Barry Keoghan, like, nude murder on the dance floor thing. Like, I'm like, I don't know. I just didn't find it. I didn't find it that shocking. It's a film.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I wonder if people were really shocked or whether they've just kind of enjoyed pretending to be or something. It's something to do.
I really enjoyed Saltburn, but I don't have anything more to say on it other than that, really. And I certainly, but the thing is, this is the thing, as a columnist at a newspaper, yeah, I cannot like be like, I just, people's opinions on things are really annoying. So you're like, well, thanks, Bridie. That's what you've literally, you're just meaningless fucking opinion about shit is basically your job. So,
well, here's one thing that I will say about Saltburn, and then no more.
Quickly,
is that it's, you know how they've really laid into Emerald herself for being the writer and kind of saying, well, she's very privileged, she's very entitled. It's not about talent, it's about basically being a nepo baby. I kind of feel like, yeah, but is it also because a woman is being successful and writing films and you don't really like that?
Yes.
That's all I'll add.
And Brian, you'll just add yes, exactly.
Yeah, Brian. Yeah. Enough.
Yeah. If a man had made that movie, there would be like, they just would have let it go again. Yeah. They just would have let it go. Exactly. Like,
he called? The Snatch guy, you know, the one married, Guy Ritchie. He was a rich man. No one gave him a hard time for that.
And they should have done.
Because he was also pretending not to be.
That was so weird.
Yeah. Mr. Motney.
I thought everything, everyone in that film, Saltburn, I thought was fantastic.
I love that we're now just
dissecting. We're now talking about it a lot. There's something about it.
So meta.
I like Jacob Elordi. I liked Euphoria a lot. He's in that, isn't he?
Yes.
Now I've moved on to Euphoria.
Yeah, young people. And I'm like a little middle-aged vampire. Listen, thank you so much for coming on.
So grateful to you. Will.
Yeah, and I love that your book is just everywhere.
Yes, well, doing really well. Bloody done.
Yeah, so do I.
Aren't you like number two or number three on the Sunday Times?
Yes, I was number two this week.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Brilliant. Well done. Yeah. That is brilliant. So well deserved. Well
number
done.
Number one next week.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
and for many weeks to come.
It won't be number one next week, but I'm just delighted that anyone's read it at all.
So I thought it was really important how Bryony was talking about the importance of being out there in public as a woman, talking about the reality of being a woman.
Because, agreed.
You know, it's like there's so many hidden aspects to struggling through this society. Many women wouldn't have the words for and wouldn't know that they had the right to say.
And I think also whenever we see a woman who is in the public sphere talking about her struggles, which we all experience, and is out there still achieving, still doing very high profile big things, her book's on the Sunday Times bestsellers list, you know, she's done extraordinary things for mental health in this country, to be able to continue to have an honest conversation about who she is, is really inspiring for us, and energizing for all of us in knowing that, yeah, if we are going to try and achieve things, it's not going to be straightforward and clean and tidy.
Right.
You know, it could well be quite complicated and exhausting and frayed at the edges.
And that's okay. Right. And I think the point about that as well was this idea of what is a mistake anyway? I mean, right. You know, if society tells you this is wrong, then you internalize that message. But is it?
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Let's go make some mistakes.
Brill, bye.
Thank you for listening and sharing in our anger.
And remember, you're not mad to feel mad.
Please like and subscribe. It helps other people find the podcast.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.